Welcome to God and Country Biblical Exposition, a weekly program that discusses current political, social, economic, and prophetic events in the light of biblical theology. This week, it's back to talking about Donald J. Trump and TDS, Trump Derangement Syndrome. For the last two programs, I've been discussing the anti-Israeli protests on college campuses and protests in general. But here's an article. Polls find most Americans are worried about violence after the 2024 election. In the latest Battleground Civility poll conducted by the Terrence Group, Research Lake Partners, and Georgetown University, 78% say they are worried that the 2024 election will result in violent activity. Participants were also asked the following. Thinking about the issue of political division as a whole, on a scale of 0 to 100, where 0 is no political division in the country at all, and where 100 is political division on the edge of civil war, where do you rank the level of political division in the country? The average response to this question was 70, meaning the majority were fearful about the prospects of civil war. Always be suspicious of polls. But in general, that poll tells us what we already know. There is ideological division in America. America is becoming two Americas, pagan America and Christian America. You know, back in the 1960s, the division between Republicans and Democrats wasn't so great. It was mostly over the degree to which the government needs to help people, how much government needs to redistribute wealth for the sake of charity. Should there be big government or individual responsibility? But both the Republicans and the Democrats agreed that abortion was evil, that marriage should be one man, one woman, that immigration needs to be regulated and limited, that government deficit spending is wrong, and that men should not claim to be women and play in women's sports. But now, each party has an opposing worldview. The Democrats believe that morals are a function of human desire, and the Republicans, for a little while longer, still hold on to morals are based on the higher law of nature and nature's God. By the way, the Biden administration has just changed Title IX in the 1972 Civil Rights Education Bill to now include sexual orientation, so that schools will be forced to allow transgender boys to play in girls' sports. 20 conservative states are now suing the Biden administration over this because Title IX was a bill passed by Congress, and the president doesn't have the authority to sign an executive order to change Title IX. But the Democrats don't care. They now believe in practicing civil disobedience when it comes to laws they don't like. By this, they gain favor with their constituency, and they put the expense and the time of suing on conservatives. Well, my point is this. Changing Title IX shows us just how invested the left is in erasing gender distinctions and creating a whole new moral world. And there are plenty of examples of social leaders in our day, legislators, college professors, public school principals, who truly believe that a virtuous world would be a gender is a choice, unisex world, in violation of God's laws established in Genesis. A nation cannot continue if half the people believe in erasing gender, open borders, printing money, and killing babies in the womb, and the other half doesn't. You know, one might say, why can't we all just get along? You do your thing, and I'll do my thing. Well, when it comes to these moral issues, your thing infringes on my thing. We don't want our children taught your paganism. We don't want your boys running in our girls' sports. We don't want our teachers dressed up in drag. And your paganism is going to bankrupt our country. Plus, there's a God in heaven who expects the righteous, if they're to be righteous, to enforce God's general basic moral law on the whole populace. whole nation. As is often said, the sin of Sodom wasn't that everyone was a Sodomite, but that the general public accepted and celebrated the sodomy. So there is a culture war going on in our country, the moral battle of the ages coming to an apex, and that's why there is such political division and political polarization in our country. And as the Bible tells us, how can two walk together unless they're agreed? That's the prophet Amos chapter 3, verse 3. That verse is often quoted, but here's the context and what it's really referring to. Amos begins with the statement, "Hear the word which the Lord has spoken against you. I will punish you for all of your iniquity." Then Amos says, two cannot walk together unless they're agreed. The point is, men cannot walk with God unless men agree with God, and God will not walk with evil. As it was, ancient Israel was not walking with God. They were acting as God's adversaries. In the same way, evil today will not walk with God's people, and God's people today cannot walk with evil. In the New Testament, we have 2 Corinthians chapter 6, for what partnership has righteousness with lawlessness, or what fellowship has light with darkness, or what harmony has Christ with Satan? As Jesus said in Matthew 12:25, a nation divided against itself is laid waste. And trust me, what Jesus says comes to pass. Abraham Lincoln quoted this scripture before the Civil War at the Republican Convention of 1858. Quote from Lincoln, "A house divided against itself cannot stand." That is a quote from Matthew 12:25. Lincoln continued, "I believe this government cannot endure permanently half slave and half free. I do not expect the union to be dissolved. I do not expect the house to fall, but I do expect it will cease to be divided. It will become all one thing or all the other." In other words, Lincoln was saying that the nation will become either all slave or all free. Lincoln went on to explain, "Either the opponents of slavery will arrest the further spread of it and place it where the public mind shall rest in the belief that it is in the course of ultimate extinction, or its advocates will push it forward till it shall become alike lawful in all states, old as well as new, north as well as south," unquote. And what Lincoln said about the moral evils of slavery, dividing the nation and winner takes all, also applies to the moral battles America is facing today. Either America will become Sodom and Gomorrah, or America will return to a Christian nation. It will become all one thing or all the other. This current division cannot continue for very long. Now, most people imagine that America can continue as some sort of moral melting pot where everyone can do their own thing as long as they don't hurt anyone else. But I hope you understand that's a fantasy. That's not the way the real world works. People become militant and evangelistic in their ideology. And no man is an island. We all affect each other. You cannot have Baal worship coexisting with Jehovah worship. You can't have communism coexisting with economic liberty. You can't have transgenderism and LGBTQ queer ideology coexisting with God's moral laws given in Genesis. You know, we've all seen those coexist bumper stickers with the symbols of various religions and ideologies. Anyone with a lick of moral sense knows that's impossible. Religious and ideological freedoms can only be tolerated to a certain point. But right now, we are in a temporary transition time where the sides are being drawn. You know, at this time, people imagine opposing ideologies can coexist, but soon, once evil is empowered, the public will come to realize coexisting is impossible. Righteous people will not stand for a neighborhood of pedophiles, cannibals, drug users. You know, we see this when Islam gets a foothold in a nation. People in the West, in their naivety, think, you know, why can't these Christians and these Islamists in other countries just get along and allow for religious freedom? But it's not until one has to live in these divided countries that one realizes a nation divided against itself is laid waste. And this is what we're seeing on college campuses. Islamic students causing trouble because they're not going along with America's melting pot of supporting Israel. And there will be the same trouble arising over all of the moral issues in our day. Now, let me clarify one point here. It's not as if the Christian community will be instigating the trouble and the division. That's what the left wants people to believe, that the Christians, in their morality, will make all of the trouble and fuss. Like when King Ahab said to the prophet Elijah, "You're the troubler of Israel." And Elijah said back to King Ahab, "I have not troubled Israel, but you and your father's house, because you have forsaken the commandments of the Lord and have followed the Baals." 1 Kings 18:18. The instruction in the New Testament concerning nonviolence and living at peace with all men pretty much keeps the Christian community docile. The problem will come from the pagans, who out of hatred for the Christians' passive resistance will persecute the church. And then the Christian community will no longer be able to identify with the pagan state, the beast, the antichrist, the system, and they will vote with their feet and create their own new governments. Well, let's get back to talking about Donald J. Trump, because he is the current figure representing the conflict. He has become the lightning rod. Last week, I attended the Trump rally in Wildwood, New Jersey. My son was gung-ho on attending, so hey, why not? It was the best show in town. I attended his rally in Wildwood in the winter of 2020. It was freezing, but the people still came out in mass. They held the rally at that time indoors. There wasn't enough room for everyone to get in, but this time the Trump campaign held the rally on the beach. The news reported that there were 80,000 people there, but these things always get exaggerated. You know, I calculated between 25 and 30,000. But that's still a huge amount of people. It takes some serious dedication to drive all the way down to exit 12 of the parkway, to wait in line for 3 hours, to go through security, to get onto the beach. The doors were open at 12, and Trump didn't show up until 6:30, and 25,000 people were patiently waiting for him. I don't even believe George W. Bush or Ronald Reagan could have drawn such a large crowd. We certainly know for sure Biden could not have drawn such a crowd. Biden just finished what he called his battleground state campaign tour, and he drew tiny crowds of 50, 100, 200 people. I suspect he had more staff in attendance than the voting public. And the spin the media put on it was that Biden was going for content over crowds. On the other hand, Trump resonates with the common man. In addition to people relating to his policies, Trump has a certain charisma about him. He doesn't use a teleprompter. He speaks off the top of his head extemporaneously. And you can tell this because his speech is not perfectly organized. He rambles, he repeats himself, but it comes from his heart. And that's what makes him relatable. The elitists, the educated, the eggheads, even the Republican Party don't get this. They're looking for a polished political speech with all of the political correct jargon. But real down-to-earth, blue-collar Americans, which is most of America, are tired of hearing those kinds of political speeches. No one's going to stand and wait 6 hours to hear one of those speeches. They'll just see it on the internet. But Trump is bringing something different to the table. He cares about the issues average people care about. Not the CRT and the transgender ideology of the pagan elites, their Baal worship. Now, as far as Trump's policies, he said something in his speech that I believe really explains his popularity. He said his campaign is about common sense. Of course, borders should not be open to let everyone in. Of course, men should not be competing in women's sports. Of course, we should be arresting criminals in our cities. And of course, America should be defending its national integrity and protecting its businesses. But what exactly is common sense? Because if you talk to a leftist, they have an entirely different worldview concerning common sense. So in listening to the policies Trump was promoting in his speech, the core difference between Trump and the left finally dawned on me. Trump holds to traditional morality and law. That what is right is a function of higher metaphysical law. What matters is doing right regardless of people's feelings. And again, that is the traditional way of thinking about law and policy. But the moral basis for the left has become affirming people. Up with people over law. And any law that hurts people's feelings should not be a law. Trump will say the criminal, illegal, immigrant element should be thrown out of the country and criminals should be arrested. There should be an end to no bail, no jail. But those on the left would say no one should be considered illegal or less than, because for the left, people's self-esteem and affirmation comes before any national identity or border or law. What is right is what affirms people. And if something is not affirming people, it must not be right. Whereas in biblical law and in traditional Christian morality, people's feelings don't matter. If your feelings are hurt, you are the problem. But the ideological religious philosophy in leftist secular humanism is that law is a function of human feelings and desires. And we're now seeing the political ramifications of this secular humanism in governance. And the left hates with a passion those who hold to those older values. They hate the judgment, the responsibility, the accountability. That is for them oppression. And they want their natural selves to be approved with all of its sin. And they hate any external law outside of themselves. This is what's really going on in America. Anyway, Donald Trump represents America's values of the past. You could even call Trump a Democrat transported from the 1960s. And here's what I find surprising. Even though Trump is not a full-on moral or economic conservative, the Democrats still hate this man with a passion. Now, I could see them hating a Ted Cruz or a Ron DeSantis, but Donald Trump in many ways is one of their own. You would think they would tolerate him as a moderate Republican. But the fact that they hate him even for the little bit of conservatism he has, just shows how far the left has moved toward the left. How the left is fully invested in transgenderism, in globalism, in Marxism, and the hating of America's founding and founding principles. They really do want to remake America into a dystopian, immoral, George Orwell 1984 communist state. It's like Revelation chapter 12, verse 12 is happening. Woe to the earth and the sea, because the devil has come down to you, having great wrath, knowing that his time is short. So America is becoming two Americas. The people are becoming polarized. And just because Trump has large numbers at his rallies, that may not translate into a victory in November, because those who love him really love him, and those who hate him really hate him, and the country is divided. Look at how the Democrats have been indicting Trump on multiple charges and in multiple trials in desperation to stop him and to drive a wedge between him and his supporters. Here's an interesting piece by Ben Shapiro. The war on Trump is about something bigger than he is. And Shapiro does a good job in summing up the situation. Quote, the attempts to take down Donald Trump are quite real, and they're having significant consequences for the body politic. They're coming from nearly every major institution in the United States, from our university to the media, from academia to the judiciary. It's happening everywhere. The real question is this really about Donald Trump as a person? Is it really about Trump with all of his myriad foibles, mistakes, and craziness? Or is it about something broader? I would contend that it's about something broader, that the elite institutions in our society have basically decided that if anyone remotely right-wing were ever to enter the presidency again, it would be an existential threat to their vision of a utopian future for the United States. It's not just that they hate Trump, it's that they despise anyone who smacks in any way of being on the right in the United States. Trump is just the apotheosis. He is the apex of all they hate. And they're able to stack up Trump's myriad of craziness and foibles on top of all they hate about Republicans. Unquote, Ben Shapiro. But ask yourself the question, what is it that they despise about the right? What is their utopian vision? Ben Shapiro didn't address the core issue in this article, and neither do most conservative pundits. The biblical explanation for their hate goes back to what I said earlier about the different bases for morality on the right and the left. What people are increasingly hating is any law outside of themselves that constrains them, that indicts them as being bad. Their egos, their sin, their self-righteousness is being challenged, and that's why they're so angry. That's why they hate the right. Proverbs 21:15, the exercise of justice is joy for the righteous, but is terror for the workers of iniquity. And so therefore, Republicans and conservatives, being the party of the law of nature and nature's God, is what the left truly despises. And this is the Psalm chapter 2 prophecy, that the nations and the people and the political leaders want to throw off the rule of God. Now, in total, I would assume that there are at least three reasons for the hate. First, as I just mentioned, their ideology, their worldview concerning sin, their dislike and hatred for the law of nature and nature's God. That, I believe, is by far the predominant reason operating in their subconscious mind. But second, they hate the right and Trump because their power is threatened. When Trump won back in 2016, it was a shock. Democrat activists were expecting government jobs and appointments. Democrat organizations were expecting grants and contracts. But the Democrats lost their power and authority. And many people live for power. One of the main reasons the Sanhedrin sent Jesus to the cross was out of envy. Matthew 27, Pilate knew they had delivered him up out of envy. Jesus was becoming popular with the people, and that meant a diminishing of the prestige and the power of the Pharisees. But finally, a third reason, money. Separate a man from his money, especially if he's living an easy life at the expense of others, and there will be no end to his wrath. You have any idea how much money went to Democrat special interest groups in Biden's three big spending bills? The COVID Relief Act, the Build Back Better bill, and the Inflation Reduction bill. Billions went out to Democrat special interests. And Trump is a threat because he is going to stop their gravy train. The government is borrowing $2 trillion a year. What happens if Trump puts an end to that? Do you know how many people will lose their comfortable social government job? And all the organizations that will lose their grants? A few articles in this regard. Johnson's spending bill includes $845,000 for gay garden parties. A massive congressional spending bill is filled with millions of dollars in funding for LGBTQ organizations, including $845,000 for gay garden parties. Another article, Biden administration to spend nearly $800,000 to study the effects of structural racism on kidney health. This effort is part of a broader push for health equity, a government-backed movement to embed critical race theory into medicine. Here's another story. DEI office in Biden's Veterans Administration is hostile toxic with rampant sexual misconduct, internal probe finds. Now, what's revealing in this article is that the Veterans Administration has 400 DEI officers. Not four, not 40, but 400. What could they possibly be doing all day long? Well, this article explains, quote, the 125-page report paints a shocking portrait of the 400-person diversity office in which employees spend much of their time filing complaints against each other instead of serving veterans. Employees engage in self-aggrandizing petty turf wars and plan wasteful events, including one junket in which 9 people traveled to dispense diversity training that was supposed to have been done by one person. Deputy Assistant Secretary Harvey Johnson, the leader of the Office of Resolution Management, Diversity and Inclusion, retired when confronted with evidence of his department's behavior. So we wonder why the country's going woke. Well, the government is hiring thousands of DEI chaplains in various government agencies to disciple the public. But these people are a heavy weight on the government going bankrupt. So what is the left going to do in regard to this threat to their government paychecks? Here's another article. They're changing federal employment policy so that if Trump wins, he can't fire them. Epic Times, Biden administration installs roadblock to prevent Trump from firing rogue bureaucrats. So I tell you, follow the money. These people are fighting against Trump with everything that they have because they don't want to have to do real work for a living. In conclusion, let's talk about the riots and the protests that might take place this fall if Trump wins. We're at a point in our country where the left will not accept a conservative president. Remember when Trump won back in 2016? The left vowed that he's not their president and that they would fight him and oppose him at every opportunity. And this they did with protests and riots and various hoaxes, the Russian collusion hoax, the phone call to the Ukrainian president hoax, and the various impeachments. The day after Trump was inaugurated, on January 21st, 2020, the Democrats organized a women protest in Washington, 500,000 women protesters protesting for feminism and LGBTQ rights. We can expect the same and worse if Trump wins this year. These are not a people who practice 1 Peter 2:17, fear God and honor the king. Remember last month, when Trump said there would be a bloodbath in the auto industry if Biden gets reelected? Well, the media took that statement out of context and said Trump supporters will create a bloodbath if Trump doesn't win in November. And many pundits pointed out that the Democrats were really projecting their own response if Trump wins. The Democrat strategist James Carville is using the argument we're hearing a lot from Democrats that since Trump is not normal, and this is not a normal election, extreme measures need to be applied. Here's a DEI officer at a state university calling for burning it all down so that her ideology can rise from the ashes. And that worldview is becoming much more prevalent. Here's an article. What will happen when they give the green light to millions of radicals to cause widespread chaos all over America? By Michael Snyder. This piece is kind of lengthy, but it's worth the read to help us really understand what might happen. Quote, violence and crime are already completely out of control all over the United States. In fact, you definitely wouldn't want to be caught in the streets when hordes of our lawless young people are running wild. If things are this bad already, what's going to happen if the election in November does not go the way that leaders on the left want, and they give the green light to millions of radicals to cause widespread chaos all over America? I think we got a small preview of this during the riots of 2020. Unfortunately, since that time, the open border policies of the Biden administration have allowed millions of extremely desperate people to come pouring into this country. The stage is being set for civil unrest on a scale we have never seen before, and it certainly isn't going to take much to push our society over the edge. We're already experiencing a crime wave of epic proportions, but I'm extremely concerned about what will happen if things go a certain way in November. If they don't win the election, leaders on the left may decide to make it very clear that it's time for civil disobedience on a massive scale. I've been warning about civil unrest that would completely and utterly tear this country apart for many years, and I believe that we are now right on the brink of seeing that happen. Many of our major cities have reached a point where they are literally on the verge of being ungovernable, and America is becoming a little bit more lawless with each passing day. Unquote. Remember, Jesus told his disciples on the Mount of Olives during the Passion Week that lawlessness will increase. The Antichrist is also called the man of lawlessness. In 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 7, the mystery of lawlessness is already at work. I don't want to over-alarm the Christian community so that we begin to worry or panic and fail to trust God's providence and protection. But I warn you so that you watch and that you're ready. Through all of this, God is planning to showcase what is really on the hearts of men. God exposes evil before he judges it. To teach the righteous, his people, and to lead those who are open to God's truth, the truth. Thank you for being a fellow worker in the truth. Thank you for your prayers and support. Stand firm in the truth. Your vindication will soon come from the hand of God. And may Jesus Christ reign.